ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयं मुदीरयेत्। नम ॐ विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्ता स्वामिनिति नामिने। नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादि पश्चात्यादेशतारिणे वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानं पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। मुखं करोति वच्चलं पङ्गुं लङ्घयते गिरिं यत्कृपा तमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुं दिनतरणं परमानन्दमाधवम्। हरे कृष्ण। So today we continue with the Bhakti Vaibhava course, first canto, chapter 13, verses 28 to 40. This is a very instructive chapter. Of course, every chapter of the Bhagavatam is very instructive in its own way. The Bhagavatam sheds light for us in the darkness of the age of Kali. The age of Kali is very dark. There is so much ignorance. And by listening to the messages of Srimad Bhagavatam, as explained by the devotee Bhagavat, Srila Prabhupada, we can get light in our path in the age of Kali, and we can see what's happening in our life and how to improve our lives by increasing our devotional service in quantity and quality. So we find many instructions in this section. Yesterday, Mahendra Prabhu, I missed it because just arrived and was doing other things. But from what I hear, from the feedback I got, Mahendra Prabhu spoke about the importance of retiring, the Vanaprastha ashram, retiring from external activities to focus more in the direct service of the Lord, particularly at a mature age. And he also spoke about the feelings of separation of devotees, like all the Pandavas, all the inhabitants of the palace in Hastinapur were experiencing great separation from their saintly family member, Mahatma Vidura. And when he came back, they felt as if their life had come back. They felt completely inspired. In today's section, we will see another intriguing aspect of Vidura's behavior, how Vidura actually was not very polite, and this you also heard about yesterday. Vidura was not polite in addressing his elder brother when he needed to be shaken in order to wake up. Sometimes in life that's necessary. When we try the polite means, and the polite means don't function for a higher purpose, sometimes we need to do something that shakes the person we want to help. And of course, that should be in consideration also with the relationship we have with that person we want to help. In the case of Vidura, he had the relationship. He had shown many times how much he appreciated his eldest brother. He always gave good advice. Now at the far end of his life, of Dhritarashtra's life, was the time to do something radical. And this we learn from Vidura. Later on we can have some discussions. It will be good if we have another mic, so when we have it, we can pass it. When, if I ask any questions, you can reply, and they can hear in the kitchen, and I can hear also. So we start with text number 28, written on the whiteboard. Ato dichim disham yatu svairagyata gatir bhavan itorvak prayashakala pumsam guna vikarshanaha ato dichim disham yatu svairagyata gatir bhavan itorvak prayashakala pumsam guna vikarshanaha ato dichim disham yatu svairagyata gatir bhavan itorvak prayashakala pumsam guna vikarshana. Dichim disham yatu svairagyata gatir bhavan itorvak prayashakala pumsam guna vikarshana. Vaishnavis, ato dichim disham yatu svairagyata gatir bhavan. Srila Prabhupada's translation on purport. Please, therefore, leave for the north immediately, without letting your relatives know, for soon that time will approach which will diminish the good qualities of men. Purport. A life of frustration can be compensated by becoming a dhira or leaving home for good without communicating with relatives. And Vidura advised his eldest brother to adopt this way without delay, because very quickly the age of Kali was approaching. A conditioned soul is already degraded by the material association, and still in the Kali Yuga the good qualities of a man will deteriorate to the lowest standard. He was advised to leave home before Kali Yuga approached, because the atmosphere which was created by Vidura, his valuable instructions on the facts of life, will fade away due to the influence of the age. For example, we read in the Bhagavatam how in the age of Kali we have short memory. So we listen to something, but very soon we forget. So therefore, Vidura was urging his brother, let's get it done now. We should do it. Come with me. Go to the north. I'll come with you. I'll support you. But move on. You shouldn't remain here in a materialistic consciousness, in a materialistic lifestyle, without even nor having even dignity, self-worth, in that you are staying with the people, the family members who kill your sons. And you still are taking their generosity. They call you king, and you still believe you are the king. You have lost everything, and you are so full that you think you are the king. So Vidura was speaking in such a mood, pushing his brother, and also, we could say, like, putting the finger in the where it hurts, knowing that he was a kshatriya. So by telling him, by touching his pride, he may react and do something, take action to take the spiritual instructions he was offering him. Srila Prabhupada continues. If I find it, let me see. To become Narottama, or a first-class human being, depending completely on the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, is not possible for any ordinary man. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita 7:28 that a person who is completely relieved of all taints of sinful acts can alone depend on the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. Dhritarashtra was advised by Vidura at least to become a Dhira in the beginning, if it were impossible for him to become a sannyasi or a Narottama. Persistently endeavoring on the line of self-realization helps a person to rise to the conditions of a Narottama from the stage of a Dhira. The Dhira stage is attained after prolonged practice of the yoga system. But by the grace of Vidura, one can attain the stage immediately, simply by willing to adopt the means of the Dhira stage, which is the preparatory stage for sannyas. The sannyas stage is the preparatory stage of Paramahamsa, or the first great devotee of the Lord. We'll read the next translations of the section, and then we will discuss three topics which are covered in this section. Thus, Maharaja Dhritarashtra, the scion of the family of Ayamida, firmly convinced by introspective knowledge, Pragya, broke at once the strong network of familial affection by his resolute determination. Thus, he immediately left home to set out on the path of liberation as directed by his younger brother, Vidura. Gandhari, who was the daughter of King Subala of Kandahar, or Gandhara, followed her husband, seeing that he was going to the Himalayan mountains, which are the delight of those who have accepted the staff of the renowned order, like fighters who have accepted a good lashing from the enemy. Maharaj Yudhishthira, whose enemy was never born, performed his daily morning duties by praying, offering fire sacrifice to the sun god, and offering obeisances, grains, cows, land, and gold to the brahmanas. He then entered the palace to pay respects to the elderly. However, he could not find his uncle and aunt, the daughter of King Subala. Maharaj Yudhishthira, full of anxiety, turned to Sanjaya, who was sitting there, and said, "O Sanjaya, where is our uncle, who is old and blind? Where is my well-wisher, Uncle Vidura, and Mother Gandhari, who is very afflicted due to all her son's demise? My uncle Dhritarashtra was also very mortified due to the death of all his sons and grandsons. Undoubtedly, I am very ungrateful. Did he therefore take my offenses very seriously and along with his wife drown himself in the Ganges? When my father Pandu fell down and we were all small children, these two uncles gave us protection from all kinds of calamities. They were always our good well-wishers. Alas, where have they gone from here?" Suta Goswami said, "Sanjaya, having not seen his own master, Dhritarashtra, due to compassion for his grief and mental condition, could not properly reply to Maharaj Yudhishthira. First, he slowly pacified his mind by intelligence and wiping away his tears and thinking of the feet of his master, Dhritarashtra, he began to reply to Maharaj Yudhishthira. Sanjaya said, "My dear descendant of the Kuru dynasty, I have no information of the determination of your two uncles and Gandhari. O king, I have been cheated by those great souls." While Sanjaya was thus speaking, Sri Narada, the powerful devotee of the Lord, appeared on the scene. Maharaj Yudhishthira and his brothers received him properly by getting up from their seats and offering obeisances. Maharaj Yudhishthira said, "O godly personality, I do not know where my two uncles have gone, nor can I find my ascetic aunt who is grief-stricken, by the loss of all her sons. You are like a captain of a ship in a great ocean, and you can direct us to our destination." Thus addressed, the godly personality, Devarshi Narada, greatest of the philosopher devotees, began to speak. So I have selected three main points to explore from this section. Of course, we shouldn't be necessarily limited to these points if you feel like you like to contribute other perspectives. But I thought this could be a good focus, and from these three points we can explore any other points you like to consider. One is what we learn from Vidura in terms of boldness and proactivity in communicating the messages of scripture, the messages of Krishna and the Guru Parampara. We need to be bold in getting across our message. Even if we are shy people, some of us may be shy sometimes and we feel fearful to speak in public for whatever reasons, but we should be bold in communicating the messages that need to reach our audience for the pleasure of Krishna and the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas, and for the benefit of the person or the group of persons we are addressing. And of course also for our own benefit. When we speak about Krishna, we also listen and we become purified. We learn. We are the first benefited. But then also, like in this case, there are people who are in need, like in the case of the Dhritarashtra, people who are not accepting the process of devotional service, or in the case of devotees are eager to hear about Krishna, or to hear about the higher philosophy of life, Atma Tattva, which will bring us to Krishna consciousness. So therefore, it is important that we are bold in speaking up what needs to be spoken. We shouldn't regret having spoken the truth. The truth should be spoken. Of course, satyam priyam bruyat. Srila Prabhupada will quote this maxim that the truth should be spoken in a palatable way. So we should speak as palatable as possible. Some people may use the sense of humor to make it attractive. Some people may use whatever personal charm they have to make it attractive. We should do it with respect for the audience. Our motivation should be to help the person, to genuinely help the soul within the body of the person we are speaking. So Vidura is teaching us this, to be bold and proactive. Another point is taught by Maharaj Yudhishthira, how despite the fact that he had done so much for his uncle and his aunt, he still thought, I have offended them. Their children were killed by me or by my brothers, by my people. They lost everything. Although they had been tried to kill so many times by Dhritarashtra and his sons, he didn't consider that, but he considered what good Dhritarashtra had done for him. Like in their childhood, he gave them shelter. He gave shelter to their mother, the mother of the Pandavas, Srimati Kunti Devi, and their little children. They were helpless little children. Had Dhritarashtra not helped them, given shelter, they may have perished. So he felt very enlivened and very grateful by the gifts he had received from Dhritarashtra. And he was considering how ungrateful he had been, that how he had paid back. He had paid back by killing his children in the battle of Kurukshetra. He didn't find a peaceful solution, and due to his greed, he was thinking in this way, due to his greed, now his uncle was suffering so much. And he thought that perhaps because of that offense, so many offenses that they committed to him, he left in despair, feeling great grief. So, Maharaj Yudhisthira gives us an example of gratitude and generosity. And we can reflect a little bit on how we can apply this in our personal lives when we deal with others, both devotees and non-devotees. Are we grateful and generous in our dealings? What can we learn from Maharaj Yudhisthira? And the third point is in text 37. It is mentioned by Sanjaya, and he says that he has been cheated by those great souls. And Srila Prabhupada in the purport mentions examples of devotees who cheated for a greater cause, including himself. Srila Prabhupada says that he cheated his family when he left home to preach Krishna consciousness. He didn't fully tell them what he was doing. He did give hints, he didn't even warn them, but finally he left without telling them exactly what he was doing. And he took sannyas. He didn't get nowadays for accepting sannyas, and there is a good reason. I'm not criticizing that. There are good reasons for that. In ISKCON, the rule is that the wife should sign. Unless the wife signs, the husband cannot take sannyas. Because in the past, some husbands took sannyas without taking responsibility for letting the family settle. They may have little children, then the wife didn't have money to take care of them. So it was actually a tragedy for the wife with children when the husband will take sannyas. So to prevent that, the GBC body took the resolution that the wife should sign. But in this case, we see that this didn't happen. Srila Prabhupada didn't ask permission from his wife to do it. And he did it for a greatest cause. And therefore, Prabhupada says that he was cheating with a good purpose. So we want to reflect on that. When it is a good moment to cheat for Krishna, or we shouldn't do that at all? We should reflect on that. Should we do it? Shouldn't we do it? When it is legitimate to do it, when it is illegitimate to do it. So these are the three points. Let's now explore them about boldness and proactivity in preaching Krishna consciousness. What can you say about that? Is it good to be a very strong preacher always, and to speak very shaking people? Sometimes that statement is given, or should we make it as palatable as possible, and then only in extreme circumstances speak in very, very strongly? Or what are the intermediate possibilities? What thoughts come to you on that?
We should care about a person when we speak. And if we care about a person, then we want to do what is best for them. So if the truth is unpalatable for them, and that makes them leave Krishna consciousness, or it kind of obstructs their advancement in Krishna consciousness, then we shouldn't speak those truths. Then we should be more gentle. So the thing is that we actually have to care about the actual person that we're speaking to, and if we do that, we will most likely make the right decision.
Okay, very good. So the inner value, like sometimes in Advaitivedanta Manor, the devotees are, particularly in the Brahmacharya Ashram, they say preach from or live life from in out. Normally we live life from out in. We develop our psychology on the basis of what happens outside. But we should live life from in out. So also when we preach, we should preach from in out, meaning caring for the soul, caring for the person. When we are thinking of the welfare of the person, as mentioned in this section, in the previous section, the term shreyas is mentioned with regard to Vidura thinking of Dhritarashtra. He was thinking the shreyas, the ultimate benefit of Dhritarashtra. And as Mother Bhagavati is saying, what this made is that he was able to take the right decision how to speak. In that case, a strong speaking was required. So he spoke very strongly. But sometimes a very soft approach may be very, very appropriate. Like, for example, Srila Prabhupada, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath ki jai. Srila Prabhupada, in some occasions, will speak very, very sweetly or very softly to his disciples. I remember one letter when some of his disciples, male disciples, were growing long hair, and Prabhupada didn't like that. So Prabhupada was correcting them, but then told them, because they were leaders, told them that I cannot be in the beginning, I can be very strong with you and speak very and reprimand you, but as time passes, as you grow, I cannot do that. So please follow my instructions. So he was pleading to them, knowing their mentality. He was using a soft or a sweet approach to persuade them to do what was best for their own benefit. Any other thoughts or points?
Yes, since my service is preaching, I thought about this many times, and I was thinking about that many times, and my nature is to be quite heavy, actually. I was very attracted by the mood of Bhakti Vikash Swami. And I believed it was a good mood. But actually, since I am with Anandini for the preaching, I saw that actually the sweet mood is better, because people doesn't like too much philosophy or too much, especially in the beginning, too much, and I do like more or less sweet preaching, and it's quite more successful actually. So. And even Prabhupada said in the beginning, just give them prasad and don't speak too much philosophy. So I think it's a good way to take people.
Yeah. So many times you are saying that most of the times we should be sweet and yes, approach people in a personal way and don't be too philosophical or too heavy. Okay, good. I remember once when I was doing traveling Sankirtan. We came to the temple, to New Brajamandala, and there was a group of guests visiting, and devotees were sitting and talking to the guests. And then they encouraged me. I was a young boy, a teenager. The elder, not the elder, but I mean older than me, they were also young men, the devotees, they encouraged me to go and preach. So I went to preach, and then I sat next. There was one guest, and there was one female devotee speaking to the guest. She was a new devotee also. So I actually was rude. I was not polite because she was speaking, and I thought I could speak better than her. I didn't realize. I was so blind, I didn't see it. So I sat there, and I started speaking, philosophy. I was speaking, and I thought, sometimes some guests will like it, people who are into philosophy, they will like it when the philosophy was presented systematically. And I like it to hear myself speaking philosophy. So, and then this fellow from the town next to the temple, At some point, he told me, "Wait a second." He said, "I like better how she explains it to me." And I went. I went back to the next room where they had sent me to preach. So many times, the personal and the sweet approach is much better than the highly philosophical approach. So to give prasadam, to give some kind words of friendship, and then give philosophy according to how much the person is willing to listen and is able to digest. Of course, for that we need also Krishna's inspiration. As Srila Prabhupada was praying in the Jaladutta, that, "My dear Lord, please make my words adapt to their way of understanding." It's very difficult to reach to the person. There are cultural differences, psychological differences, personal. So it's difficult. But we can do it with Krishna's inspiration, with Krishna's help from within the heart. Mahendra Prabhu?
Just thought that one consideration is it depends also on the personal nature of the devotee. So we can't really give the formula, this is good or bad in general, and depends. One should be natural, that's what I wanted to say. Like Srila Prabhupada obviously had a fighting spirit, he liked to argue. He told once, "Shuddha Kirti Prabhu, you're not fun, you never argue back." I'm joking with him, but he expected that he liked that. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, when he was young, was going in Calcutta as a student, was going in a market and was just looking for people to argue. You know, there was a place that they just go and talk about any topics, especially philosophy. But he was going there looking for opponents to fight. But not everyone is like that.
So be yourself, and if you have a strong nature, use it wisely in Krishna's service.
Yeah, and then the other thing was also we shouldn't imitate, especially depending on the context, you know, when Prabhupada sometimes spoke strongly, but from his position was people accepted, like there were instances where in a talk with a professor, old professor comes and Prabhupada speaks very heavy directly, and the person takes it because Prabhupada is, you know, he's also old and respectable, but if someone else, like younger and not in dispositions, tries to imitate it, it just doesn't fit quite well.
Yeah, we shouldn't imitate it. In the past, we will even imitate the Prabhupada's Prabhupada, isn't it? Sometimes. And this is imitating Prabhupada. We don't need to do everything exactly the same like our spiritual master or the acharya or the person we appreciate. We can be ourselves, apply the principles we learn from the acharyas according to our own nature, who we are. And then we be ourselves, just communicate to the best of our ability.
Just one aspect, how do I perceive it? Usually in our society we had so-called strong, powerful speakers and also those who are soft. The way I judge them is the way how do they deal with their God brothers and God sisters. Usually those who are heavy, they are not able to handle also input from their God brothers and God sisters. So, and somehow that's really amazing. For the sake of preaching, they are still continuing to act in a such a way. But when you reflect, how do they deal with the input from their authority? You see, they are not able to obey. So that's one aspect. And regarding the heaviness, of course, if you have deep relationship with someone, there is no need to be heavy. You can pull someone up just because of you care. But if you don't have deep relationship, then you are able to be nasty, heavy. But I don't know how helpful is that. That's my experience in life. And
well, what about then Vidura telling his elder brother, more or less he was saying, "You are like a dog." That's what he told him. "You're like a dog. Look at you." He was telling, "Look at you. Your teeth are falling apart. Your liver is is not functioning. So you could say he seemed like a cruel person. Sounds like he was telling like that, look at you. So what about that? Is there a place for heavy speaking, for boldness and proactivity?
Vidura was caring so much about him, but of course, what's their relationship? They are what? Brothers, right? So in that sense, that's the way you can handle it, but if you don't have such a deep relationship throughout the whole life, how can you smash someone in terms that it's going to pull someone from benefit? That's how do I see it. Brothers.
Ananta Rupa Prabhu?
I think Prabhupada in the talk someplace that the guru is allowed to chastise the disciple. He makes exception that you're supposed to speak nicely and softly and sweetly, except when you have a relationship of the spiritual master and the disciple. He gives example in that a father or mother to their children can speak strongly because relationship is different for the correction. So I think in this case maybe Vidura was also acting like a guru, I don't know, but even though the brother was the elder, so there was a conflict there in terms of Shishtachar and or he was a
good, very good point. And actually, so we need to look at that makes us think that we need to look at the context, who is speaking to whom, in what context. Also, a speaker from the Vyasasan may speak in a stronger way than the same person, the same speaker, in a personal dealings, depending on the relationship. And in Bhagavad Gita, we find the verse mentioning that austerities of speech are speaking the truth, and speaking the truth in a pleasing way, and quoting Shastra, and avoiding offending the person. And Prabhupada in the purport says that one should not be very eager to instruct those who are not his or her disciples. So one should not try to instruct those who are not not students. The teacher can instruct the students. That's his duty. But the one should not speak strong to someone one does not have the right or the connection, the relationship to speak strong, generally speaking. Otherwise, we may offend the person. We will move. I would like to take the points, but we will move to the next point. I'd like to conclude this point by mentioning that still there is an important place for boldness and proactivity in spreading Krishna consciousness. Had Srila Prabhupada not been bold in coming to the West and in speaking the truth, we won't be here today. So it was by Srila Prabhupada's mercy that we are here. He was very bold in coming. And therefore we need also to beat the iron. I don't know if in English you use it. This is a translation of a Spanish expression. Beat the iron while it is hot. Like the blacksmith, when shaping the iron, puts it in touch with fire, and when it is hot, it's shaping it by beating on it while it is hot. So when there is an opportunity, we should take that opportunity to communicate Krishna's message. We shouldn't let it pass. It's an important opportunity we have, let's take it. And they also say in English, to make hay when the sun shines. So when in the fields, there is a time when collecting the hay that has been cut, and that's when the sun shines, especially in Belgium. The sun doesn't shine very often, isn't it? So there is a time to cut the grass and to do things. Pandu Vijay Prabhu knows that very well for a lifelong experience. So there is a time when you need to take the opportunity. So when we have the chance to preach or to do something which is profitable for the benefit of others or the benefit of the Krishna consciousness movement, we should do it. Otherwise, leaders also say, I remember there was one book, The 1 Minute Manager, about management. The saying was, procrastination is the death of the leader. Procrastination, to procrastinate, is the death of the leader. If something that needs to be done now, it is not done, you are finished. You may lose the opportunity, or your project may collapse. So we need to take the opportunities. In this case, had Vidura not taken that opportunity, he would have not saved Dhritarashtra. But he said, let me give the final punch, my last try, and I'll be bold to do it. And another translated Spanish saying, because in Spain we tend to leave things for tomorrow, mañana, mañana. Isn't it? Mañana. Do not leave for tomorrow what you can do today. So what you can't do today, do not leave it for tomorrow. Do it now, especially in preaching. Okay. We have only 5 minutes for the other 2 points. Let us see how do we do this. Gratitude and generosity, as described in text 33. If we go to Srila Prabhupada's purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, Maharaj Yudhishthira took into account all his unavoidable misdeeds, and he never thought of the misdeeds of his uncle and company. Dhritarashtra had suffered the effects of his own misdeeds by the will of the Lord, but Maharaj Yudhishthira was only thinking of his own unavoidable misdeeds. That is the nature of a good man and devotee of the Lord. A devotee never finds fault with others, but tries to find out his own faults and thus rectify them as far as possible. So I thought that it would be nice to take a little time for personal reflection. Maybe take half a minute, 1 minute, to think, what can we learn from Maharaj Yudhishthira in terms of this principle he's showing of gratitude and generosity in dealing with others? What can we learn that we can apply in our personal life? How can we apply this? Please take half a minute. I'll leave you 1 minute, maybe one, and think of something, some area of your life in which you could, something practical, something concrete you could do to improve in this particular principle of gratitude and generosity as exemplified by Maharaj Yudhishthira. Okay, normally we will have some further discussion, but I encourage you, if during the day you can share with a friend a little bit about that, about gratitude and generosity, and something you have thought you could do to improve in that. Whatever you have thought about, please share it with someone else. And the final point, it's in relation to text 37, cheating for a higher cause. Let's go back to the verse. Sanjaya says, "My dear descendant of the Kuru dynasty, I have no information of the determination of your two uncles and Gandhari, O King. I have been cheated by those great souls." And Prabhupada in the purport gives different examples of cheating for a greater cause. For example, Prabhupada says that the Lord asked Maharaj Yudhishthira to cheat Dronacharya by saying that Ashvatthama, Dronacharya's son, had been killed when it was not true. Also, Sanatana Goswami cheated the jail keeper. Remember, he told him, "I give you some money, I want to go on pilgrimage to Mecca." He didn't say, "I want to go on pilgrimage to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to Prayag, or to Vrindavan, or Puri." But he said, "I want to go to Mecca," because the jail keeper was a Muslim. And Raghunath Das Goswami also cheated his family guru, his priest, and guru, spiritual master, Yadunanda Acharya. He pretended to go and do puja, although actually probably Yadunanda Acharya knew his heart and helped him out to escape from the pressure his family members were putting on him so that he won't have the association of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then Srila Prabhupada's own example. So the question that comes to mind, how this is related to the principle of truthfulness. We are meant to be truthful and to avoid speaking lies. So when it is appropriate and when it is not appropriate to say a lie, or even if not saying a lie, to do something that pretends something else. Sometimes we don't say this, we don't say something, but we act in a way which may give the person to think that it's something else. Like I remember when I was visiting the temple when I was a minor, visiting the temple against the will of my parents, I will say, "I go to the group. I go to the group." And I was thinking, actually that was a trick, because "go to the group," I was thinking my parents would think the group of friends with whom I was having discussions on UFOs and parapsychology. But in my mind I was being a bit crooked and saying, "the group of devotees." So actually it was cheating. And I don't regret it, because Srila Prabhupada here, I think it's okay. I think it was a bona fide cheating in that case. I never told them, I don't want to make them upset that I was cheating you. And I never told them that. I don't know if they know, but we don't speak about these things when I visit them, especially now they are old, in their old age. We don't speak about these things. But, okay, that I will say, in my estimation, that will be okay. But I cannot use that to justify any other diversion of saying the facts, stating the truth, the facts. You wanted to say something, Madhu Gopal Prabhu? White lie.
A leugentje voor zijn best wil means a lie for his own good. So, like with Yudhisthira, you know, the Pandavas, they had to win the war. This was the goal. And the goal was good because Yudhisthira was a good king and Duryodhana was a bad king. So, because the goal is good, of course, Prabhupada says you have to know what is good. So, therefore, they were ordered by Krishna. Arjuna was ordered to fight the war. So, Prabhupada says you have to confirm it, what is good and what is not good. If you don't know, then better not do it. He also calls it catching the fish without getting wet. So, like in the past, sometimes devotees did illegal things and then they got caught, and it was really, really bad. So, generally, we try to follow moral principles. Still, the main principle is to please Krishna.
Okay, good. So, the criteria you are saying, the criteria to sanction a white lie is the principle is pleasing Krishna. Okay, what other criteria are there? Because what about, I remember one devotee was taking someone in Sankirtan, somebody told me. The first time he was taken on Sankirtan, one devotee told him, come with me, we go on Sankirtan. And then he realized he took him to steal from a supermarket. Was that Sankirtan? He could do it for Krishna. He was taking things for Krishna because according to that devotee in his mind, he realized that that belonged to Krishna because the supermarket is Krishna's. We are serving Krishna, so we have the right to go and take. Is that a good understanding of Krishna conscious philosophy? No? Why not? Just a thought. I mean, I don't want...
Yeah, it's not your property. It's from somebody else.
Okay. It's someone else's quota. What the Ishopanishad says, Ishavasya midam sarvam, magrida kasyas vidhanam. Do not take others' wealth. And also, be truthful. Samodamastapasaucham, shantim arjamam evacha, jnanam vikyanam astikyam, brahma karmas bababajam. So truthfulness is very important. So normally, what pleases Krishna is that we don't say even white lies. Normally, no white lies. Only in extreme circumstances or under Krishna's orders or for a very high purpose, like in this case, the truth could not be revealed because the higher plan will be impeded. Then it cannot be revealed. Only in such extreme situations, when the higher plan is going to be impeded, then the white lie may be used.
Yeah, everything is said, I think. Because just like I was thinking, if you would like, how to say in English, by hook and by crook, so-called, sell a book, and that would please Krishna because Krishna wants this book to go out. But when you upset somebody, Srila Prabhupada clearly said, if they are upset, then you're a rascal. So sometimes what pleases Krishna, but it can be maybe not pleasing the spiritual master, which is a higher principle.
So, yeah, we shouldn't justify improper actions by taking a good principle, like here. Cheating for a higher cause shouldn't be used for not practicing the principle of truthfulness, which is very much emphasized in Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Okay, the last 1, 2, 3 points and we end.
Yeah, I just think we can lie if it's for the sake of others also. If it's for the benefit of others, if it's...
We can. Yes, but very careful. Normally we don't lie, because normally lies do not benefit others. Normally, but only in extreme circumstances, when there is, unless you do that, it won't happen, then in that extreme circumstance, there may be sanction for not revealing the truth, or when violence, where the principle of ahimsa, of non-violence, is compromised to save the life of someone, then you may lie. The principle of ahimsa stands higher than truthfulness. For example, in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, that's mentioned. If you have to choose between one of the yamas and niyamas, ahimsa prevails, non-violence.
Yeah, I was going to say the same point. The scriptures say that to protect someone's life, you're allowed to lie. And the Prabhupada also says the vaishyas, the merchant, has to lie to make a profit, and he needs the profit. So, but then he says there's a limit to how much you can do that. There's a limit. I mean, the merchant company has to make a profit, but then there's a limit to how much you want to do that. So, those were two things.
Good, thank you. So let's recap what we have done. We have been reflecting on boldness and proactivity in spreading Krishna consciousness, as Srila Prabhupada exemplified, on gratitude and generosity in dealings with others, and on cheating for a higher cause while keeping intact the principle of truthfulness, like speaking the truth as a rule of thumb, and only in special circumstances for a higher score, for in extreme situations, using that device that Vidura and Dhritarashtra exemplified in this section of the Bhagavatam. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.